to another installment of the Omnicare Clinical Nurse Podcast Series. Our goal is to touch on relevant topics that are common to the post-acute care setting. The clinical nursing team at Omnicare is comprised of mostly former acute care directors of nursing, regional nurses, and infusion nurse specialists. My name is Eileen Catalano, Omnicare Clinical Nurse, and I will be your host today. Joining us today is Corey Bishop, Director of Clinical Nursing. For today's topic, we will be discussing IV tips and best practices. Thank you, Corey, for joining our podcast today. Obviously, administering IV medications can be quite complex depending on the therapy. When preparing for today's podcast, how did you determine the most important tips you wanted to share with our listeners?
Well, thank you for having me, Eileen. When our team was asked about this topic, we unanimously agreed that it was going to be pretty easy to identify common areas for improvement with IV therapy. Omnicare nurses conduct quality audits at skilled nursing facilities on a routine basis. So what we'll share with you today are the most common opportunities for improvement in IV med administration that we've identified during our audit process. What I'm about to describe now is one of the most common IV medication errors and yet the easiest to avoid. I am referring to the fact that sometimes the full dosage of medication is not delivered. You see, oftentimes manufacturers will overfill IV bags used as diluents for safe delivery of IV medication. The overfilling is allowed under good manufacturing practices and is done to compensate for evaporation. So here's an example. A 250 milliliter bag of normal saline has an overfill of 25 milliliters, so it actually has 275 milliliters in it. And to that, we're going to add another 10 to 12 milliliters of reconstituted vancomycin. So now we have a bag with 285 to 290 milliliters of total volume. The order reads, infuse 750 milligrams of vancomycin in 250 of normal saline over 90 minutes. The nurse programs the pump to deliver 250 milliliters over 90 minutes. At the end of 90 minutes, the pump alarms with infusion complete. In reality, there may be up to 35 to 40 milliliters left in the bag. If the nurse doesn't reprogram the pump to deliver the remaining volume in the bag, the patient will not receive the entire dose of medication. And in fact, they will have missed about 12% of the prescribed dose. Remember, that's more than 5%. So now it is a medication error that is clinically significant.
Wow, that is significant. That's a great example of why it's so important to infuse the entire bag. So even when the nurse has infused the ordered dose, he or she may likely need to program the pump a little longer to ensure the entire contents of the bag is infused. Thanks, Corey. All right, moving on to our next topic. Can you tell our listeners what information is needed to be used for a central line when a patient is admitted to the facility?
Well, yes. First, you want to be sure that you have a prescriber's order. Additionally, total catheter length, external catheter length, and documentation of the central vascular access device tip location must be included in the medical record prior to administration of medications. So documentation may include a copy of the chest x-ray report that is going to tell us where the tip of that catheter is, or fluoroscopy report, a telephone order from the radiologist stating the location of the tip. So, for example, is it in the cable atrial junction? Is it in the superior vena cava or SVC? Or is it in the inferior vena cava or IVC? Or you could also find that on the copy of ECG technology if that was used, the report from the ECG technology. It is really best practice to have your admission team work on getting all of this documentation for you in the admitting paperwork from the hospital prior to the patient arriving at the facility.
Where is the tip supposed to be?
According to national guidelines, the tip of a peripherally inserted central venous catheter or PICC line must terminate in the superior vena cava, not the right atrium, subclavian, or inanimate vein. If it's not in the SVC or superior vena cava, the tip is malpositioned and should be adjusted. adjustments are typically done under fluoroscopy or by a PICC-qualified nurse. Tips in the subclavian and inanimate vein have the risk of thrombophlebitis development. Tips in the atrium can lead to arrhythmias. If you ever suspect that a line has shifted, you should contact the resident's prescriber and ask for an order to obtain a chest x-ray to verify tip placement.
What does each measurement indicate about the PICC?
Yeah, let's define some of the terms we just used. So total catheter length is the measurement from the internal tip to the junction with the stationary connection wings used for stabilization. This is the length of the catheter intended for insertion into the vein. The external catheter length is the measurement of the external catheter that extends from the insertion site to the connection or wings used for stabilization. Tip placement is the location of the tip when the external catheter remains constant. In regard to the number of lumens, it's important to check. Does each lumen have a positive blood return? If not, make sure you get an order for cath flow to declot that lumen to be sure that line is patent. Otherwise, your resident is at risk for missed doses.
Can I use tubing for longer than 24 hours if I just run an IV once daily?
Well, that's a great question. Administration sets used for intermittent therapy must be changed every 24 hours and any time a new catheter is placed. They must also be labeled with date, time, and the nurse's initials when removed from the package. For continuous infusions, you can use that tubing up to 96 hours. And if you use an administration set for more than one dose in a 24-hour period, there must be a sterile end cap placed on the distal end of the administration set upon completion of each dose.
What do I do with my tubing when I disconnect it from the resident?
If the tubing is able to be used again, it must be correctly capped. End caps or disinfectant caps are provided from the pharmacy to keep the end of the line sterile. You should never loop the tubing back by connecting it to one of the ports on the tubing. If you find tubing looped, it should be discarded and replaced.
When entering IV flush orders, how do I know if the line needs heparin?
Oh, I get asked that question all the time, Eileen. Short peripheral catheters only require saline. If you're using a midline or central line, they come in either valved or non-valved. A valved catheter only requires saline flushing. Valved examples would include Groshong, Pass-V, or Solo. Also, a valved central line will not have a clamp. Non-valved catheters, or those with clamps, require heparin. To make your life easy, our Omnicare team has created a table that breaks down flushing protocols, and you can find that in the infusion manual. It's called Infusion Maintenance Table, and it is in Appendix A1. This table includes ports and tunnel protocols as well. In most cases, you can ask yourself, does this line have a clamp? If yes, then yes to heparin. If no, then no to heparin.
Corey, can you give us some tips for checking for signs and symptoms of infection?
Sure. I think it's really key here to mention the importance of assessing the IV site and checking the integrity of the dressing every shift. Also, ensure that you are routinely changing the dressing weekly and any time the dressing is compromised. That's why it's so important to date and time the dressing. It's a huge risk for infection if the patient's dressing is not dry and intact. When you're checking a site for possible signs of infection, you want to look for erythema, which is redness at the site. You want to look for swelling, drainage, and induration, which is thickening and hardening of soft tissue. You can feel this when pressure is applied. If you suspect an infection of a PICC or a midline, compare the arm circumference to the baseline measurement from when it was inserted. Look for changes in skin temperature at the site, changes in color of the skin, and assess for tenderness along the vein track and at the site. Ask your resident if they're experiencing numbness or tingling or any other symptoms at the site.
Are there any other elements we should consider when thinking about infection prevention?
You always want to make sure that the solution is not contaminated. Do not use the container if the container is leaking, the solution is discolored, cloudy, or particles are noted in the solution, or if the container has expired. Notify the pharmacy of the product problem and return it to the pharmacy on the next run. We would be remiss if we didn't address additional infection prevention strategies as we talk about IV tips and best practices. Infection control is crucial since IVs provide direct access to the bloodstream. Taking shortcuts as they relate to infection prevention places our residents at great risk. When you're preparing to perform an infusion task, you should wash your hands for 40 to 60 seconds or use alcohol-based hand sanitizer with at least 60% alcohol content. Apply liberally and rub your hands for 20 to 30 seconds until the alcohol dries. You should not wear artificial nails when caring for infusion therapy residents. Each time you access the needleless connector, you must perform a 15-second vigorous mechanical scrub for manual disinfection with an alcohol wipe and allow it to air dry. When you prepare a site to cover with a new dressing, you should clean the skin using ChloraPrep or chlorhexidine by scrubbing vigorously back and forth for 30 seconds and then allowing the site to air dry. Remember, no blowing or fanning back and forth with your hand.
This is all great information. Now that we've covered the basics of infection prevention, we can begin our wrap-up of our IV tips episode. Our goal is to help you provide the best possible care for your residents by providing the resources and education when and where you need them. I want to take a moment to thank our expert today, Corey Bishop, for sharing your expertise in providing this valuable information for our listeners. I'd also like to thank everyone for joining us today for this episode. We truly hope that you've learned something and look forward to having you tune in for additional podcasts in the future. If any of our listeners have questions regarding the information we discussed today, please reach out to your Omnicare clinical nurse or account manager. And if you're interested or not familiar with Omnicare's vast array of services, please contact us at elearning@omnicare.com. Have a great day.